Hey, thanks for tuning in to our second episode of How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm Madison from the SBDC team, and today you'll be hearing from our counselor, Sarah, and you'll also meet two of our clients, Mike with Proof Incubator and Kalina with the Bitter Bottle. Kalina came to us about 2 years ago when she was first launching her business, and we met Mike a few months ago when we were looking to launch our restaurant recovery program in response to COVID-19. A lot of the topics in today's interview came up because of the pandemic, but really they're relevant at any point in time because they cover resiliency and innovation.
Today we have Mike Robinson and Kalina Goldsworthy with Proof Incubator and Bitter Bottle with us on the How to Business podcast. Hey guys, thanks for joining us today.
How's it going? Happy to be here.
Hello.
We're so excited to hear more about both of these businesses and learn from you guys about what other businesses in the food and beverage industry can do to position themselves in a crisis situation or in just an everyday situation. Mike, if you'll tell us a little bit about Proof Incubator and what are you guys doing there?
Proof is a lot of things. And so part of the business is an incubation component. And Proof was kind of concepted out of the lack of resources for the food and beverage and consumer goods industry. I've spent my time and career in food and beverage at a lot of different levels, from franchises to my own startups, and more recently set out to build Proof as that resource center for other food and beverage entrepreneurs. And so we do consulting, incubating, and coaching for the food and beverage industry. And we also have a bar and commissary kitchen at our location in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We come alongside businesses and entrepreneurs that are typically past the business 101 phase and a little further down the road to help them kind of refine or accelerate their model, so that we run a number of programs to accelerate existing consumer goods products and help them go to the next level from, say, the farmer's market to more traditional retail channels at Whole Foods and beyond. And then we also, when the pandemic hit, we kind of doubled down our focus on restaurants and catering companies and those that were the most impacted, and developed a restaurant recovery program that we've ran here in Chattanooga in partnership with the SBDC office. And we've had 40 plus companies go through that program. And it's a 4-week course where we look under the hood and the financials and figure out where they are in their recovery, or they may have grown during the shutdown and pandemic, or may just be opening. And we come alongside them to just add as much value as we can.
That's incredible. And it's really filling a huge gap that we've had in the Chattanooga market for a long time. I know a lot of big cities have been doing food incubators. We're so lucky that we have that now. Kalina, tell us about your business baby, the Bitter Bottle.
The Bitter Bottle, I like to say it's a cocktail solutions company. We focus on creating herbal bitters and tinctures predominantly for those in food and beverage. It's funny, I actually met Mike, I've come across Mike quite a few times throughout just working in food and beverage. But I got to know him pretty well by going through their Consumer Goods Accelerator program, which was kind of one of the first programs I think that Proof did without really being called Proof. So we are Tennessee's first legal alcohol-based bitters company. And we are also really heavily focused on education and kind of focusing on using what we have around us. So really big on local agriculture and utilizing those things to create really fun cocktail menus and programs. And what we've kind of transitioned to a lot through the pandemic is doing a lot of online courses to keep people fun and entertained, but also to kind of explain what exactly herbal bitters are and how we can use them in cocktails and how you can use a lot of the stuff that you've grown in your garden to make fun cocktails and things like that at home.
So you have a history of innovation already with kind of paving the path, being the first. What did you say it was? The first?
Oh, we're the first alcohol-based bitters company in the state.
Yeah, so you already know a lot about innovation. What are you doing to kind of keep your business on its toes and to continue to innovate?
Yeah, I think for the Bitter Bottle, man, it's been a lot of paying attention to what it is people are looking for. I think how we got started in our industry was a lot of innovation, just because we kind of had to find our way to create our product and to do it the way that we wanted to. And that was a challenge for sure. But what it definitely taught me through the process of everything that I had to go through to get that product to market was to really pay attention to what it is that people are looking for. And I think especially with what's been going on with the pandemic, it's been a really wonderful opportunity opportunity for small businesses to slow down and to really pay attention to where are my customers, what are they looking at, and what do they need right now. Maybe it's not exactly what I was creating before, but I can shift my focus and what I'm creating to find a more meaningful way to be a brand that people can trust and rely on, or even offer just some sort of escapism and entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we started doing a lot of virtual classes. That was probably one of the biggest things that we did. And we started to tag on little fun cocktail kits. So you can make cocktails along with me now when we teach virtual classes. And we also started to pay attention just in general to our product line, finding that bitters are a bit of a niche market to begin with. So understanding that there's going to be a little bit more conversation, people might not be really ready to make that initial purchase of, you know, a 4-ounce bottle of bitters, which is what I sell to bars and restaurants all the time. So we ended up reframing our product line and offering different sizes, which have been hugely successful, especially with the holiday season. So it's just been a lot of kind of slowing down, and it takes a lot of time to turn a corner and do things a bit differently, but it's proved to be very much worth it.
I imagine when you wrote your business plan, you didn't include Zoom cocktail classes in your original business plan, right?
No, and I didn't include shifting to e-commerce this early on in our business career either. We had predominantly intended to focus on wholesale accounts and really getting into bars and restaurants, and we had launched our product officially a year ago, actually today, and the entire intent for pretty much 2020 was to slowly get into e-commerce, but to really build out getting into bars and restaurants. And obviously, for us, 3 months after we launched, we started to find really a lot of placements out of state, and it was really fantastic. And then when the pandemic hit for us, we obviously lost our entire customer base, which caused us to really hit the brakes and completely head in a different direction, which is something that I was very unfamiliar with.
That's incredible. Mike, I want to ask you, what can food and beverage businesses do to create resiliency? And what are just general best practices?
Well, happy anniversary, Kalina.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
Honestly, I mean, I think Kalina kind of laid out the embodiment of it, and it's really innovation, just trying anything. There's a lot of factors that come into it. You don't want to just start doing stuff to do stuff, but you do have to have a level of experimental or kind of creativity to where you're throwing some things on the wall to see what sticks. Innovation doesn't have to be expensive, and I think that's one of the hurdles people have to get over as owners. They look at the budget, no, there's no money there, I can't do anything. That's kind of the wrong answer. You have to be a little scrappy and find ways to develop new verticals and opportunities for your business, to keep your employees employed, to keep your brand in front of people. And so that's kind of been one of the bigger items, particularly in 2020. It's quite the unusual year for everyone, but a lot of things are still the same, and innovation is one of those. You need to be aware of your customer and their needs and adjust accordingly. And this year it happened to be shutdowns and shelter in place, and it limited their access. So we saw a lot of companies pivot quickly to adopting or fully embracing third-party delivery systems and online ordering, and creating, like Kalina did, packages and kits and more experiences that could still be done remotely, because people, they still want to be entertained. They still want an experience. So finding innovative ways to kind of bring that into homes has been obviously one of the biggest things this year.
What about beyond that? Like, what do you recommend a business do to manage their cash reserves?
Yeah, I think innovation doesn't have to be product development. Staying along those lines, it may be staffing models or like incentive models for your staff to be more productive, etc. And that kind of segues a little bit into your cash management, especially like in a crisis scenario, whether it's a natural disaster, pandemic, your fryer catches on fire in your hood system and whatever. There's a million bad worst case scenarios for restaurants that create crisis really on a daily level. Restaurateurs and bars kind of operate in the very immediate and the now on their feet. It's always putting out fires. With the cash reserves or runway, just understanding where you're at and what you're capable of. You don't have to have coffers full of cash, but you do need to understand what's your runway. And that's fairly simple equation. It can be back of the cocktail napkin math of, okay, this is my average income every week. This is my average payroll and my fixed expenses. What happens if all of a sudden I can't operate or have any income? So what's the worst case scenario here? I can't defer rent. rent. I still got to pay insurance. I still got to pay taxes, this, that, and the other, but I'm not going to have any income. So how long can I survive like that? And that's kind of a worst case scenario burn rate when it comes to your cash position. And then you kind of want to paint two pictures, if you will, of evaluating your cash reserves too, that if maybe sales slow down or maybe it's business as normal, but understanding your cash cycles on what if payroll and a food order and taxes all hit on Friday the 1st, the same week, is that a $20,000 cash swing? And if so, what's your operating account look like after that? A lot of operators are week to week with cash flow and it's not the best place to be, but it's hard to save up and put those reserves aside, but it's critical because it allows you to capitalize and innovate and pivot really quickly if you have the means to do so. And you can really be opportunistic and honestly grow and get a lot of market share if you are able to move quickly enough.
And not even just having cash on hand, but just knowing your numbers. Like you said, it's simple math. And I think the pandemic brought to light a lot of businesses who weren't keeping up with their bookkeeping and, of course, made it tremendously difficult for them to get emergency funding. I would just add to that just the critical importance of really managing your numbers well. Yeah. Along with your cash.
There are a lot of businesses that still hadn't finished their taxes for the year before. Yeah. Because their books weren't in order and weren't able to go and get relief or grants and things like that, or they scrambled and created more stress and work for themselves. It's tough. I mean, most entrepreneurs, a lot of people, if you're not a numbers person, if you're not a spreadsheet guru like Kalina, one of the last things you want to do is open that bank account or try to figure out why QuickBooks isn't reconciling. It's just like, oh my God, I'm just going to put it off. I got to get through service today. I got to make this wedding cake. I got to do a delivery. And so it's usually is one of the first items that suffers because it's the least favorite thing to do. Yet it's probably and arguably the most important piece to running a small business successfully.
I do. I love spreadsheets. I love it. But even for this year, for me operating the Bitter Bottle, I think I'm very fortunate that I'm surrounded by really wonderfully smart, intelligent, inspiring people like everybody on this podcast today. But honestly, it's really hard to even want to look at the numbers this year. Mm. But honestly, like having that thought process, like that Mike explained, that's kind of been instilled in me. The only way we're able to kind of pivot and do a lot of those innovations is by taking that hard look at the finances and saying, okay, we could stop spending money here and we could invest in this. And I think this is going to be a bigger return, especially with what's happening in the world. I think that you're very right too when you say that a lot of people kind of get stuck in this is the way that we've been doing things, this is what we have to keep doing. Mm-hmm. And we were able to find a way to continue to do the products and the offerings that we had had, but finding a little bit of money, a little bit of runway, a little bit of leeway, and, you know, really paying attention to those numbers, say, okay, well, we could take this, we could invest it over into this and just give it a try. And then you start to see some returns on it. It makes it a lot easier to pivot and to make those changes.
I think it's probably very true that a lot of businesses are really kind of scared to see how much damage has been done this year or how bad the wound actually is. But it's important to not be stuck in their ways and realize, wait, I really am bleeding on staffing or maybe this product that's not even really moving. Not be afraid to look at it so that you can make adjustments and changes. That's a really important point. Mike, you mentioned that another way to innovate is with your employees. Tell us some strategies about how we can create loyalty with our staff.
I'm on a project right now in California that's facing another shutdown for 30, 60, maybe even longer. I mean, there's grumblings that they'll keep restaurants completely closed to takeout delivery only until April, which is just a death blow to a lot of people. And then so these owners are scrambling just to survive. And unfortunately, a lot of resources and things have kind of dried up. And then winter's here and COVID's surging. So it's a real challenge to kind of, you have to both look at your business and what you're going to do to survive, but you also got to take care and invest in your team and your talent. And for a lot of small operators, it's essentially their family. And so it's a very difficult position that people are in, but if you're able, what we're seeing more times than not is that you're going to get your 10x return if you can invest in your staff and create the right culture and attitudes to where they're in it with you in the trenches and trying to innovate and go above and beyond for customers and do everything they can to help the business survive. And also themselves, they got the rent and apartments and cost of living too. We've seen a couple good programs shifting staff to, say, delivery drivers and like other things, opening up kind of catering developments, taking the time right now to invest in kind of continued education or development of your staff has been big. And they see that, and they see that commitment to them, and it motivates them to work harder. But in this scenario, we've always believed in investing in staff and continuing education, but especially currently, if your operations have to change and you have bandwidth, then they can get additional certificates or training to be better experts within the industry. And sometimes that's outside of the industry too, investing in them and their hobbies or just understanding, taking the time to understand what their goals are in life. And a lot of the greatest employees I've ever had a goal when they came in of, hey, I want to own my own bar, I want to open a climbing gym, or I want to do this or the other. And so if you take a little bit of time to kind of help them towards that initiative, their productivity just skyrockets for you and your business. I think the biggest takeaway and recommendation I would have is how can having the owners kind of take a step back and try to figure out how can they invest in their talent, the team members that have already shown talent, that are high quality, and both develop them within the company, but also developing kind of their passions and stuff. And it creates a really great culture. So just investing back into your team, it doesn't have to be money. It's really time and energy is what it is.
That's great advice. I've never thought about that with investing outside of the business, like whatever their personal passions are, and even just letting employees freely talk about that at work and build that relationship with them that, yeah, you know, how was rock climbing this weekend? Or have you gotten that new gear yet? Or whatever, mm-hmm, to show that you are invested in them.
The labor pools change so much. I mean, I've been in this industry essentially my entire, mm-hmm, life, but professionally and at an adult level, 20 years now. And people don't want to serve tables forever, and they don't want to be cooks necessarily. And so that you've got a big shift, but there are people that adopt it as a profession. And if you find those, hold on to them with everything, mm-hmm, you got. But it is a high turnover industry, and you have a lot of transit people working in it and kind of in school or just in between things. And so it makes it difficult to kind of give out that amount of energy and investment into staff. But we're seeing it, especially with the younger generations, millennials and below. That's what's motivating them. It's leaning into their passion, innovation, and that's what's getting them more committed to give more for you and the company.
This next question is for both of you. Kalina, you can go first though, but what trends are you seeing within the food and beverage industry? Kalina, with you specifically within beer and liquor.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I think before everything kind of started to happen in 2020, we started to see a really significant shift towards more health conscious options, a lot more non-alcoholic options or lower alcohol content. So mocktails were set to be the drink of 2020, which I think ended up being the complete opposite of what most people were drinking in 2020, as it would turn out. But we do definitely still see a lot of trends kind of favoring that, especially now as we head into the colder months and we've kind of solidified what life is like. I think for the time being, we definitely see more of a trend more towards those health conscious options. A cool thing that we've been seeing a lot more different alcohol options, whether they be kombucha based alcohol or just different ready to drink cocktails. And I think that we're going to continue to see a lot of that and probably a lot of consumer goods products come out of everything that's happened in 2020, which is going to be more of that ready to drink option. Seeing a lot of cocktail kits come out of bars and restaurants as well. Obviously, we all miss going out to bars and restaurants, and we miss the atmosphere and the aesthetic, and nothing will ever be able to replace that. But we are seeing a bigger trend in people in general just trying to recreate a lot of these sort of rituals that we have when we go out to eat, whether it be with just a few small friends or if it's just a little date night at home, wanting to create having good food and drinks. So we're seeing a lot more of decent ready-to-drink cocktails and cocktail kits coming out now.
That's really fun to hear that those kind of things are on the upswing. And I wonder if maybe 2021 will be the year of the mocktails, since we all decided, yeah, that we did, in fact, need alcohol in 2020.
We're all recovering now, yeah. We need a little bit of a detox in 2021.
Right. Mike, what are you seeing in the food and beverage industry? I feel like in the past, like food trucks had their big upswing, and of course, they're still plentiful now. What's on the horizon? What do you think will happen?
Kalina kind of nailed it on the healthy alcohol options. You've seen that in food as well. Just consumers are significantly more educated and conscious of what they're putting in their body on all levels. I think you were seeing a lot of innovation around ready-to-go meals and food planning and everything from Blue Apron to some of the meal prep kits to just more ready grab-and-go stuff, because people are busier and busier than ever. And a lot of those companies you've seen have just massive growth because the pandemic really forced a lot of people to adopt online ordering and meal planning and things like that from those companies. So you've seen them just grow exponentially, which is really cool. It's kind of a success story, if you will, that's come out of all of it. But the traditional restaurants, bricks and mortar, and like food and beverage industry, it's crazy the amount of innovation that's happened out there. It's pretty inspiring, but it's difficult. I would say just the overarching migration to kind of digital platforms and interface has probably been the most widely adopted kind of pivot for these companies finally, because a lot of operators and restaurateurs are essentially technology illiterate, and someone built their website 5 years, 10 years ago, and they have no idea how to even change the PDF menu from 2015 that's on there. We run into that a lot, and that's just part of it. It's not where their focus is at, and it's been okay until now, and now it's not okay. You need to be on Facebook, you need to be on Instagram, you need to have online ordering connected to your website, you need to be signed up for dinner delivered, DoorDash, Uber Eats, Waiter, like all these delivery platforms, kind of the last mile delivery platforms. And you have to figure out how to do all that and do it well. And so I think that's been a big challenge, but a lot of people have accomplished that fairly quickly. And a lot of them are starting to implement their own delivery systems and innovate kind of new family meals and recipes and products that just travel and carry well. And a lot of restaurants are actually packaging kind of their flagship recipes and stuff and doing some really neat kits and meals and things like that.
And I imagine it allows them to kind of expand on their target market too. So whereas they probably maybe before a restaurant had more like single people coming in for dinner hour, now they can kind of cater to families, just as an example, by doing like meals to go. I thought a really cool innovation I noticed pretty early on when the pandemic started was, I can't remember if it was Square or a different point of sale system, but a lot of the point of sale systems pivoted very quickly to allow features for restaurants specifically. They immediately get their menu up online and do online ordering. So I thought that was really cool. And I think it's a valuable thing for business owners to make sure they stay in touch with the technology that they already have. Click through all the options and see what availability you have. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You might already have the tools in your hands.
Yeah, a lot of those resources were there, just not being utilized. It's literally, there's point of sale stuff. You just need to flip a switch and turn on a delivery app and it would go live for you. It's been neat to watch those kind of innovate and jump into those options. Drive-through windows is another one. I've seen a lot of projects that were under construction. And they're like, they all of a sudden, you would see it stop, and then like three walls disappeared, and then there was a drive-through window. I don't know if anybody's waited in the Chick-fil-A line recently, which I'm sure we all have. Yeah, you talk about a business model that's being adopted on a lot of fronts. So another fun one that'll be
interesting. I know, I love all the memes where it's like, just let Chick-fil-A figure out how to do this. They'll figure it out.
When I landed out here in California, I immediately was trying to find an In-N-Out burger, which is the California's version of Chick-fil-A, if you will. I went to three and the lines were so long, they were like wrapped around five times and down the street, but the Chick-fil-A lines were empty. I was like, this is great. I'm going to go to Chick-fil-A.
So Mike and Kalina, if someone is wanting to open a new food and beverage concept in 2021, what advice do you have for them other than don't?
Kalina, you get to go first on this one.
I'll speak a little bit more to the consumer goods side of things, and then I could speak a little bit to bars and restaurants as well. But I think now is a really fantastic time for innovation. I know we've touched on it a lot, but I think that there's a lot of opportunities. The world that we've seen in 2020 has presented a lot of areas where a lot of industries can make improvements and innovations and kind of flip things on its head in different ways. And so I think that if you have an idea and you think that it's solving, especially these newer problems that we've seen come about, like I said, for consumer goods, I think we're going to see a lot of products start to be developed and see a lot of really great things come out. But I think that the most important thing is, similar to the things that we touched on in the conversation today, is to really ensure that you have the financial runway to test out a lot of these things, that you kind of thought through all that stuff, because when you start a consumer goods product, a lot of times you think that it'll be pretty easy. Well, I've already made this a couple times at home. It'll be easy for me to scale it up. And it tends to prove not to be that way pretty much ever, I would say. So I think kind of testing out your concept and getting feedback is probably the most important thing, and deciding whether or not it's really worth it and you're solving a lot of those issues. I think the food and beverage side, and I'll keep it brief because I know Mike has a lot to say on this one, but I think when it comes to bars and restaurants, I think it's all about really listening to what people want. It's definitely a scary time to step into this industry. A lot of really incredible bars and restaurants shut down in the midst of everything. Some that we thought would absolutely never close. We thought they'd be like legacy bars, kind of places that I look up to in New York City. What we find is that every city is facing this differently. So there are different areas and different parts of the country that are able to kind of capitalize on everything that's been happening. I think we'll see that an outdoor bar concept, or if you've got a lot of things that are really a little bit different, that it's worth exploring for sure. But I think it's a time to be a little bit more cautious. Before I continue rambling, I think, Mike, you should just take over on that one.
My recommendation would be to not do it. But entrepreneurs are inherently stubborn individuals. And when you tell them not or they can't, then that's exactly
what you want to do it more.
Do the opposite. Yeah. So if you have to do it, I think just really evaluating the model that you're going to open and how it can thrive if this, say, happens again or continues this pandemic, if you will. But also, I think if you can look at the pandemic from a different lens and look at it a little more opportunistically, which isn't easy, you kind of have to stop consuming media and news. But there is a lot of opportunity, frankly, if you're opportunistic with it. There's going to be a lot of real estate. There's going to be empty restaurant footprints. There's going to be a lot of availability for infrastructure and things like that for people to capitalize on and take advantage of and potentially lower the upstart capital of a traditional bricks and mortar. So I think it's evaluating the model, making sure that it has the dynamic and ability to kind of pivot and do to-go or delivery and things along those lines. And then if you're a brand new business just opening, making sure you add those verticals and elements to the playbook so you have a better chance of success. But there's a natural attrition or kind of some fat that's been cut out of the market. So I think as things do bounce back, hopefully almost going to see kind of binge traveling or binge eating and tourism, if you will. So hopefully there's a huge surge in the summer that people could capitalize on.
So if I'm wanting to open just a pretty standard burger place or coffee shop, not necessarily innovative ideas, you think maybe hold off on those?
I would, but from the point of taking advantage and kind of seizing the moment, you're also in a position because developers and real estate people, distributors, everyone's kind of hurting. So there's almost an opportunistic moment to renegotiate or to leverage a really good lease deal or a really good distribution contract and things like that. So there's a lot of opportunity that can be leveraged in your favor as a new company. But unfortunately, I don't think 2021 is just going to be back to 2019. Things have changed and they've changed forever, from consumer habits to the economy, and the virus unfortunately just isn't going to go away overnight either. I stress that you at least pump the brakes and don't make any decisions that lock you into anything until spring, because I think we'll have a way better sense of things. But also, if you aren't building in some of those innovative things that could weather the shutdown or this current environment that we're in, then just put it on pause and take the time to go organize all your resources, access to capital and mentors and people that can help you get started.
Great advice. So if you're interested in starting a food and beverage business in the next few months, maybe wait till spring, have a financial runway, make sure your idea is resilient and innovative and your operations are flexible and nimble, and seek out your resources.
Yeah, and those resources too, you could, instead of opening your concept, a lot of people get fixated to open a bar is the number one American dream. And it's mind-blowing because you associate it with a good time. And that's just not necessarily always the reality on the ownership side. And they have over a 72% failure rate before 2020. So that's going to increase. Taking a step back from the emotional side of it and really evaluating what it is and what you want, both quality of life and career-wise, and then with the concept. Because there could also be the opportunity to maybe acquire a business that isn't doing so well and kind of refresh it, inject it with a little bit of your personality and vibe. But like, there's a lot of ways to go about it rather than just, here, sign a lease. I'm going to do what's always been done in this industry. Because more times than not, it doesn't work. It's not a good strategy, but people continue to just keep doing it.
Well, guys, I'm going to ask you the one question that we are going to ask all of our guests on the How to Business podcast. And if you each don't mind to answer, and this doesn't have to be necessarily food and beverage related, it could just be general operations or anything really. But the question is, what advice or recommendations would you give to other business owners? Colina?
I think one of the biggest things that kind of stayed in the back of my mind that a mentor told me when I was kind of getting started is I have this mantra that kind of sticks in my head, and it's a combination of all this advice that some mentors have given me over the years, and it's kind of just work hard, keep your head down, and stay humble. I like that for a few different reasons, because I think that obviously if you're a small business owner or a business owner at all, you inherently work incredibly hard. The keep your head down part for me is obviously it's very important to pay attention to what people are saying, pay attention to criticisms and critiques and things like that. But you also have to make sure that you're listening to the values of the company that you've created and trying to stay true to who you are and what you want that company to be. I think it kind of goes right into what we were saying before. When you start a business, especially in food and beverage, honestly, I think all of us start businesses because we have this vision of creating the best quality of life that you can, having your fantastic, someday I'm just going to own this company, have the best work-life balance, I'm only going to work 9 to 5, I'm going to have all this free time, and it's going to be great. But that's really not the way that it ever tends to work out. But I think that if you can hold true to what are your goals and what are your standards of achieving those and how do you want to do that, and kind of keeping yourself contained in a way that doesn't allow you to chase things left and right, to be really intentional with your choices. And then obviously, like, the last part of stay humble, I think, is really important, because I think as a small business owner, you always are learning. And that's what I love the most about my industry in food and beverage, but also about the fact that I started my own company, is every single day I have no idea what to expect. I learn something new every day, and to me, that's the most exciting thing. I couldn't ask for a more wonderful job in a more incredible industry than to be able to learn every single day. So if I kind of keep that mentality of I have something to learn every day, I'm not the smartest person in the room, I can learn from everybody, I think that that's the best way to keep an open mind when you run a business. And I think that that's so very important.
Such wise words. Mike?
It's a tough follow-up there. I think knowing kind of what you stand for, and if you haven't asked yourself that lately as an owner, maybe you need to. That's something that we preach a lot, is that value proposition. Like, what's making you better and different? Because just being local isn't enough, or just having the best biscuit isn't enough. And so what are you doing both as an operator to instill those values for your team, your company, and your customer? A couple different layers to it, and ensuring that that's intact and it's like a ethos or a code, like Kalina said, it's baked into every component of what you do. That'll keep you on track and keep you focused when it feels like the world's burning around you, from the social unrest to the pandemic to just a furious customer out front or an employee that walks off the shift. If you kind of have that bearing, it can help you maintain clarity when there's a lot of chaos. I would recommend just a plan. It's surprising how many people don't have this, but just a what if. Like, it doesn't have to be a professional document, this handbook or binder. It could just be, hey, these are the 5 steps we're going to address if we X, Y, and Z happens. And it's a pretty universal kind of crisis response. It really centers around just communication and making sure whatever your plan is, nothing's going to be perfect. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to overreact or underreact. But if that's communicated to your staff and to your customers, no matter what you do, almost, you'll be better off in the end. And just having that plan, it doesn't have to be super detailed, but just having, this is what I'm going to do if X happens, and how I'm going to communicate to the customers. Go ahead and write a post for what that could be. At least you can be that proactive with the pandemic of like, okay, we get a case, like let's go ahead and draft the communications for that. It keeps chaos at bay, if you will, for both your staff and customers. So that's a big one. To Kalina's point of just in my career, I got started as a line cook, and I remember working Mother's Day weekends, and you'd do $45,000 in a day in sales. And it was just daunting, the amount of tickets. I mean, just endless rows of tickets, and you're worried about ticket times, and it could all fall apart really fast, and sometimes does. But the best people I worked with, and mentors and bosses that I've had, is just don't stop moving. If you stop moving, you're done. And I kind of try to apply that philosophy into everything I do, whether it's innovation or just keep moving. And right now, that's going to be harder than ever with the fatigue of 2020 and just one hit after another. But you kind of just got to keep moving forward one step at a time, one day at a time.
Kalina, tell us where we can go to buy your products.
Well, we obviously, as I touched on, we launched our e-commerce site this year. So you can visit us at www.thebitterbottle.com, and you can find us on social media at The Bitter Bottle.
Awesome. And Mike, tell us a little bit about the best way to get involved with Proof Incubator, or how we can visit the businesses that you currently have established there.
If you're in Chattanooga, Tennessee, we're open Wednesday through Saturday from 5 p.m. to late. And we have several different companies, including The Bitter Bottle, that's featured, and different food makers and bakeries. And you can essentially support, I would say, about 7 different companies with one meal when you come to Proof, experience the incubator and the cocktail bar. Yeah, to get in touch with us or learn more about what we do, or if you have a concept or a product or need some help with your venture, you can go to proofincubator.com. And check out some more and reach out to us and learn more about our programs and what we do.
Kalina and Mike, our listeners can learn so much from you guys. Thank you so much for taking the time with us, and I really appreciate you guys being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Sarah, there were a few things that jumped out to me from that interview with Mike and Kalina, things that I've heard you talk about with your clients or that we've talked about in the office. The first thing was business owners usually get too caught up in the day-to-day things and they don't focus enough on the big picture. Is there any advice that you would give to our listeners about how often they should sit down and reevaluate big picture items?
Well, I think that's a great opportunity to mention taking advantage of our counseling services here at the SBDC. If you touch base with your counselor every quarter or so, that's a great time to kind of reevaluate. I always have my clients write into their business plans what their ultimate vision is for the business, making sure that it is in line with their lifestyle, like Kalina mentioned, kind of reverse engineering it. So if that's your ultimate vision, then where do you want to be in 5 years, 3 years, 1 year, 6 months? Continuing a business counseling relationship, you can kind of just stay accountable to the goals that you set for yourself.
And one thing that was mentioned a few times was how difficult and intimidating it can be to look at the numbers of your business, but really how critical that is. That kind of goes in line to reevaluating your big picture. Whenever people come in for counseling, we can help them with their numbers as well, right?
Everyone in our office, we're all numbers people, so to speak. We love looking at the numbers. I think Mike made a really great point that you don't have to make it really complex. It doesn't have to be this really intense spreadsheet. You don't have to be an accounting major to stay on top of your numbers. Just create a system that works for you. I've seen clients just have very simple Excel. I have clients who work out of a notebook, all kinds of different methods. As long as it works for you, that's what really matters.
Kalina mentioned, and I thought was really interesting, she said when she has a bit of extra cash in her budget, she's not afraid to throw it into a new idea. What do you think about that?
Well, I know it can be hard for entrepreneurs when cash flow is already tight to think about investing in new products or new ideas, but it's kind of like the old adage, you know, you got to spend money to make money. I think it's a very wise decision to take those risks. Innovation really doesn't happen without being willing to take those risks, and oftentimes that takes investment of money and or time. So I completely agree with Kalina, and I think we'll continue to see her products innovate with her using that strategy. And I think we all have learned a lot today from Mike and Kalina, whether you're in the food and beverage industry or not. It's stay resilient and stay innovative.
Thanks for listening to our second episode of How to Business. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at TSBDC Chat, where you can get updates when we release a new episode and other news. Again, that's at TSBDC Chat. The How to Business podcast is produced by podtopics.com in collaboration with the SBDC of Chattanooga. To learn more about PodTopics, visit podtopics.com, and you can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts.